Welcome back, everybody. It's the Just Noise Boys. It's episode 2. I'm Johnny. He's Andrew. And we're both tired because it's early. We had to get up early for this one.
Yeah.
That's fine. I can deal with it.
All because today we're interviewing Nick Nocturnal, the boy from YouTube. He lives in Ontario, so he's 3 hours ahead of us. So for him, it's like, I don't know, 11 or 12 p.m. right now. Or
he's probably thinking about lunch right now, whereas I just had breakfast.
So I haven't even finished my morning coffee yet, so it's weird. But yeah, we're up for the boy. Last time that we woke up this early was probably to come home from NAMM in January when we were in California. So we're both feeling a little tired right now, but that's all right.
You mean go to NAMM?
Oh yeah, we came home at night. I forgot about that.
Yeah, we traveled at night, baby. We got up early in the middle of one of Vancouver's shittiest snowstorms.
Mm-hmm. 4 a.m. To be precise.
4 a.m. to walk to an Evo. And for those of you that don't know what an Evo is, it's a car sharing service in Vancouver. You find them on your phone and you walk to them. And there was one, I mean, if it wasn't a snowstorm, relatively close to the house.
But it was a snowstorm.
It was a brutal snowstorm, so we had to tread through the snow. A little Koopy was carrying his big old fucking suitcase.
That was like the size of him.
Yeah. And then as soon as we landed in California, it was the complete polar opposite, and our city was in turmoil.
Yeah, and we had to... When we got to the Evo, I was the only one that had gloves, and there was no, like, little snow scraper thing in the car, so I had to go outside with my fucking just hands and, like, use my hands as a shovel and just wipe all the snow off the car so we could see and drive, so that was fun.
It was really loose snow. That's a good thing. It was loose snow, so
it was quite the experience, for sure, but it made getting to California all that much better, to be honest.
Oh, for sure. So what's new with Andrew? I almost burped.
Oh, yeah. Our moms, both of our moms watched our first episode of the podcast, and I think they both had the exact same critique, which was, number one, why does Johnny burp so much? That was the top of the mind on both of our moms.
It's all my fault. But now here we are talking about it. I just want to apologize on behalf of the Just Noise Boys. I will not burp in podcasts for now. Unless people want it, then I'll definitely do it.
Yeah, so that's all you. I'm pretty sure I didn't burp, but if I did, I apologize as well. I'm sorry, moms.
You said the swear words.
I said a lot of swear words. That is true. So did you. Yeah. But yeah. All right. Anyways, I'm trying to think. Well, I've been playing a lot of Final Fantasy VII Remake. I know that's super exciting news for all of you. Almost done that game. It's awesome. And I've been waiting for that for years, as many of you have. And I think it was totally worth it. And I'm... Yeah, that's like the main thing I've been doing is just playing a shit ton of Final Fantasy VII.
What was your favorite part of the game? And why it was the cross-dressing fun part.
The cross-dressing part was pretty awesome. That might have been my favorite part of the game just because it was so funny. And, you know, everyone thought they were going to cut that from the remake because it was like kind of controversial. But they made it even more intense than it used to be, so that was cool. But other than playing Final Fantasy, I'm trying to think of what else is new. I've been making some new progress on the new band. Hopefully that'll be coming out relatively soon. Obviously can't divulge too much there, but we've been pushing ahead despite the quarantine. So I'm hoping that'll be out in a couple months, maybe. We'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to your new project.
Right. What else is new for me? I'm trying to think. I think that's pretty much it. I got a couple like sponsorships coming through for my channel. I got a new Harley Benton guitar, which I've never tried that brand before. So I'm pretty excited to work with them. And I'll be also giving a guitar away. I think that's pretty much it. I've just been pretty much doing the same thing, just chipping away at YouTube. Oh yeah, also this month marks a year since I quit my job to do YouTube full time, which is fucking crazy. So that's super cool. I think at the end of this week will be a year since I quit my job. And that's, yeah, I don't know. It's crazy. It's cool that it's working out, 'cause I was very nervous when I started doing this.
This was something that Andrew contemplated for Years. 2 years.
Yes.
Because you were at BBTV mm-hmm. before, and you had asked that. You asked us that question 2 years ago, and I was like, yeah, man.
Yeah.
You should definitely do it. That was before you had 100K.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I still think you should have done it then, but that's fine. It was a smart decision to kind of sit on it for a little bit longer, wait a year. It was the responsible Andrew decision.
But it was definitely tough to do, but I think that it was the right decision for sure.
Oh, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, BBTV was cool too, though. Like, the job itself was pretty... It was on brand with what you do now, and you know, it's not like you're not working a 9-to-5 in a fucking grocery store or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so my, I guess, like, for context, my full-time job before quitting to become a YouTuber was I worked at a company that was like a content network, essentially, for YouTubers. So I already worked within the YouTube industry and within the music industry, so it was already... pretty on brand, and I liked the job and I liked my coworkers a lot, so I didn't really mind working there, obviously. I was like borderline about to quit to do full-time YouTube, like Johnny said, like 2 years ago, I guess now. And I think I actually told my manager that I was going to quit to do this, but when I said that, they came back with a raise offer, basically, that I couldn't refuse, so I ended up sticking out for another year. But despite getting the raise and making a little bit more money there, I still eventually decided that it was worth it to quit and try and pursue my own thing, which right now I'm very glad that I did because, you know, as I said, it's been a year and everything has actually been working out to my surprise because I was definitely not sure if this was going to be a good idea or not. But so far, it's been pretty good.
Well, and now is a better time than ever to be a YouTuber. That makes
for sure.
Because this doesn't really matter to you for the most part.
To some extent, yeah. I mean, yeah, it definitely doesn't affect me nearly as much as you or like anyone else who's lost their job basically for an unforeseeable amount of time. You know, I've definitely got it pretty good in comparison, which is lucky, but you know, it's still very shitty to see how much it affects you and a bunch of our other friends who don't know what the fuck they're going to do because they don't know if their job is ever going to come back or if it's going to be a year or 2 years or whatever, right? Like, no one knows.
This is random, but just because we were talking about BBTV, have you been watching Peter Chow's TikTok?
No, I haven't.
He's been doing pretty well.
Yeah, I think I follow him, but honestly, I don't really use TikTok that much other than, like, to post my own things, which I know sounds kind of shitty of me, I guess, but... I don't know.
The TikTok, I feel like the TikTok community probably doesn't care as much as, let's say, the Reddit community does when it comes to you not participating and posting stuff.
I forgot about that. I was thinking about that yesterday, too, actually. Yeah. So I got banned from, like, or I didn't get banned, but I think, like, Reddit, r metalcore, like, hated me because I posted my own videos in r/metalcore because I was like, they're fucking metalcore videos. I don't know. Like, why would I not post them there? And they would always, like, the mods of that Reddit would always delete my videos because they were like, you're self-promoting. Like, or what did they say specifically? They were just like, you should try being a Redditor on YouTube and not a YouTuber on Reddit or something like that. And I was just like, okay, well, I'm just going to quit. So that was the last time I used r/metalcore. Good times.
I love Reddit. I use Reddit every day.
Oh, man. They can turn on you in a dime, though.
Yeah, but, like, that's the thing. Like, Reddit is very, like, the subreddits are very community-based. Like, if you're all about that subreddit, you participate, you do it. The users know who you are.
Yeah.
That kind of thing. So, I mean, for the metalcore one, it's funny. Yeah. I mean, I think you can get away with it in the gent one, I think, if you really want it, because they don't really care that much. And I post in the gent one, too, but I don't really participate in that group that much. Usually, they're just like, check it out, it's Tesseract, or holy golly gee, it's Meshuggah.
That's kind of
like,
the thing
that
I understood what the guy was saying. Like, I get it. It's like, if you're only using the Reddit to spam your links, like, fair enough, I get that. But at the same time, like, it's not like I was posting irrelevant things. Like, I wasn't posting every single video I did. It was only, like, if a video was, like, about one of the biggest metalcore bands of all time, I was like, people will probably like this here, so I'm going to post it here. It wasn't like I was just posting random shit I did, you know? Like, it was stuff that made sense, where it was like, oh, I did a guitar riff evolution of Architects, and Architects is like the most popular metalcore band, so people will probably like this year, but apparently that's not okay. So
nope. Here, get out of here. Get out of here. But you're not one of us.
But yeah, so that's pretty much it for me, just chipping away at YouTube and all that stuff. How about you, Johnny? What's new with you?
I broke a lamp yesterday, and I was nice. Pretty upset about it. It was like a, I don't know what it's called. It was like a little, it's like a little glass bulb thing that has like electrical, little electric-y things, and you touch it with your hands.
Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
So I had one of those, and I bumped it off my desk, and I didn't realize actually it was made of glass. I thought it was made of plastic, and it smashed everywhere, and yeah, that's pretty shitty.
It's been a been a big week for you, I can tell.
The quarantine woes. No, the since the last time we talked, a lot of stuff has happened.
Yeah, especially for you.
Quite a bit of stuff. Pretty much right after we did, I can't remember if it was before or like directly after we did the first episode, I did a vocal audition for Novelists. Because their vocalist Matt or Mateo had left to do his own thing. And I was like, yeah, you know, I'll do it. Why not? This is before any of the Angel Maker stuff was going on. So I was just like, yeah, cool. Let's do it. And I did a vocal, full vocal cover of The Light the Fire, because that song is super dope. And it's like one of their most listened to songs on their Spotify. And I did it, and it did pretty well. It was doing pretty well all across all platforms, which was pretty cool. And then right after that, I started getting into serious talks with Colton from Angel Maker about joining the project. It's something that we had been kind of loosely discussing for a little while. Not me necessarily joining the band, but me helping write and help with the creative side of things, because he was feeling frustrated when it comes to the creative process of Angel Maker. He wanted some help working out some stuff and like a different perspective on on writing Angel Maker.
Yeah.
So I was down to do that, but it became like pretty serious talks about like, well, let's just do it. Let's just like actually have you in the band, and we'll have three guitar players.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
And but, now you guys are like one member shy of being Slipknot, basically.
We're just about the Slipknots of deathcore, which is cool. Yeah.
You guys gotta get a second drummer.
Yeah. So there was a lot of discussion between me and everybody.
And, was that a burp?
No, it wasn't. That was a burp. It wasn't. There's no way you could audibly hear that. And yeah, so I joined full time, and it's pretty dope. We've already started writing. We're doing some pretty cool things when it comes to writing songs. Colton came up with this process where basically we share this Google Doc folder, which has everybody's name on it. And on the top, there's little subcategories for 5 days of the week. And for Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, that's five.
good job.
There's different subgenres for every day, and the goal is to write in that subgenre for each day. It doesn't have to be a full song. It could be like a riff and, you know, a chorus or whatever. But you write something that pertains to that subgenre of metal, and then you post it just to kind of like get the ideas flowing, and like if stuff comes out of writing in those subgenres, that's great, and we can use it. If not, whatever. At least so is that something?
Is that just you and Colton doing that, or
no? It's all of us. So everybody minus the vocalist, besides Casey and Mike. So it's me, Colton, Matt, and Jesse.
Gotcha.
So yeah. So like Monday is black metal. Monday is metalcore. We already did that. Tuesday is black metal. Today is like brutal death metal. What the fuck is Thursday? Oh, Thursday's hardcore, and then Friday is progressive. So
cool.
I'm excited for Friday because progressive
is the first week you're doing that.
Yeah, this is the first week. So yeah, I did the metalcore song already. I did a black metal one yesterday. So today's brutal death metal.
Are you doing the typical Johnny thing and writing a full song for each one?
Yeah. I'm trying not to do a full one. I'm trying to condense the ideas a bit more just because you know, it's fucking five people posting stuff, yeah. So I don't want to like overcrowd too much. So yeah, I'm doing that for the most part. But yeah, it's been cool so far. I've been really digging that.
Nice. That sounds like a pretty good idea.
Yeah, it's cool. Anyways, and then the novelist thing was still doing well whilst all of this was happening, and I already joined Angel Maker. But I got an email back from Nicholas, I believe is his name. He's the primary songwriter for Novelist. And he asked me to do the second round of auditions.
Right.
which was super flattering and awesome, but I'm not going to take on another full-time band like that, especially an international one.
Yeah.
So I had to, just because of everything that was happening with Angel Maker, it makes more sense for me to be in that band than pursue Novelist.
Mm-hmm. So well, also you're now in three bands basically. So
yeah, I'm doing a lot right now. Yeah. So I want to, you know, keep it a little bit less than three.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I had to email him and just say thanks for the offer kind of thing and, you know, wish him good luck and stuff, which sucks because I do like that band. It would have been really cool.
Yeah.
But there was also a lot of stuff that was like, he was like, hey, if you could relocate to France, would you?
Oh, wow. I didn't know that was part of the equation.
Yeah, it was a question that was in it. And I was just kind of like, he said it's fine if you don't want to. But I think like for that to work, it would probably
be. Yeah.
You know, they're primarily touring in Europe,
mm-hmm.
and they haven't, I don't think they've ever toured North America, so it's just kind of like, wouldn't make sense.
I mean,
right?
Like, you can make it work for sure, like, for example, well, I guess we'll talk to Nick about this later, but, like, his bandmate Andy Sizek is, you know, he's the vocalist of Monuments now, and he obviously lives in, like, I don't know, somewhere in the States, like Maryland or something.
Yeah.
But everyone else in Monuments is from the UK, so they... I don't know how they make it work. Maybe Nick knows. Maybe we could ask him. But it's definitely doable for some people. But I think it takes a specific kind of person to want to do that, and a very specific kind of band to allow, or not to allow someone international, but like to be willing to work with someone internationally and like understand the limitations that come with that, I guess, and like manage expectations. But I don't know.
Yeah, yeah. It is what it is. I just knew that I couldn't do it, and I didn't want to lead them on any further, I guess.
For sure.
But yeah, they sent three brand new songs that they've been writing. It's like a pre-production version, and they're really cool. And I'm not going to kind of say what it sounds like because they were very explicit on not like obviously showing anybody the songs.
Yeah.
But like they're definitely different from what you would expect them to sound like. So if you are a Novelist fan, like, look forward to that because it's pretty cool.
Nice.
Yeah. And yeah, that's it.
That's about it. Just
playing Warzone with the boys.
Yeah. Warzone every single night, basically. I think I don't think there's been a night that I haven't played Warzone for at least like an hour.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm a champion, too.
Yeah. Johnny got first place once, so he thinks that he's the best out of our friend group now.
Yeah, shout out to Case and Jesse, Fox Boys, for getting me that W.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. That's new for me as well, like I said earlier. So, yeah, I guess that's it for the intro section. So I guess we'll just do like a quick little intro about Nick Nocturnal in case you guys somehow don't know who he is. So I've done a lot of collabs with him over the years. He's, of course, primarily known as a YouTube guitarist, I guess you would say. He kind of got his start by doing really, really, really fast covers of songs, basically, where he would have a guitar cover up of a band within hours of it being released. And he still does that to this day. But of course, over time, he's kind of expanded and started to do lots of other things. Him and I together do a lot of collabs on something called his like stereotype videos, where basically we'll choose like a genre and just make stereotypical riffs of that genre. What else does he do? He has reaction videos. He does like kind of little meme videos, lots of stuff on his channel. And then in addition to that, he's also in a kind of online band project with Andy Sizek, who is the vocalist of Monuments, and that's called Termina. That's his primary things. And we're going to talk to him in just a few minutes here and see what he's got to say.
We did meet him in California as well.
Yeah, we met him for the first time in person in California at NAMM, which was awesome. Him and his girlfriend, Netta. They were super fun to hang out with, and it was great to finally meet him. It's always really cool meeting like someone you work with online for years and years and years, and then you finally meet them in person. It's always super trippy, and it was really cool to finally do that with him.
It's like, oh man, you're so much taller than I thought.
Yeah, definitely the first thing I noticed.
Yeah. No, they were great, man. Hanging out with mm-hmm. them was fun. They were cool. I always like. We were talking about last podcast, and we're like, "Don't meet your heroes," kind of thing. But yeah. Like, not saying like Nick is my hero, but like meeting people that you watch online all the time, you just like kind of cross your fingers and hope that they're really good people right. or that they're cool. And Nick is an incredibly down to earth human being, and his girlfriend is super nice as well.
Yeah. So, well, I guess in your case that makes a little more sense because like I talk to him all the time because we do a bunch of videos together. So
I had not talked to him at all.
Yeah, like I already knew it was going to be all good. It's pretty, I mean, in my experience, if you know someone online, it's pretty fucking rare that when you meet up, they're not like their online personality at all, even though I right. still worry about that every time because, I don't know, I think I'm going to get catfished or something, I guess. But far I've had good luck with that, and everyone I've ever met who I've worked with online has been a absolute gem.
Yeah, Drusev is the same as well, too. Yeah. Drusev is, like, about as nice as I had hoped he would be, for sure, too. He's a great guy.
Definitely.
So
without further ado, we're going to cut to the Nick Nocturnal interview.
Oh, that's a good way to start.
We were just talking about that earlier.
We were just talking about it. Our moms commented on our podcast saying stop burping and swearing, and then that's exactly how I want this to start, actually.
Yeah. Oh shit. So oh my god. All right. Well, sorry, your guys' moms.
I don't care. It's fine.
I goof really quickly.
Okay, so we're here with Nick Nocturnal. Nick, how's it going, man?
It's going well, man. It's going well. How about you guys?
Good, good. We were just talking earlier about how tired we are because we don't normally wake up this early. we're kind of like you, where I think we've talked about this before, where you go to sleep at like 2 or 3 in the morning and wake up at like 10 or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's us too. Except like 3 hours earlier you know what I mean? Glad to hear you're doing well. So, as we were mentioning earlier, I'm sure most of you guys know who Nick Nocturnal is, but he's a good old YouTuber, does lots of guitar covers really, really fucking fast, and he also plays in a band with Andy Sizek called Termina. We're just going to be asking you lots of questions about all of that good stuff.
Is it Sizek or Sizek?
Oh, fuck.
You know? Does anyone know?
I think it's... Does anyone know? I think it's... I'm pretty sure it's Sizek.
Okay.
Pretty cool. Sure. Sorry,
Andy. I just assumed. I don't know.
Yeah. I love it. Yeah.
So I guess we'll get started like right at the beginning. So, what made you get into music before even YouTube was a thing? Like, how did you get into metal and playing guitar in the very first place?
So, I grew up with my cousin pretty much in the same household. We all live with my grandparents, and he was always like 4 years, I think 4 years or 6 years older than me. So we'd always be kind of gaming, like we'd play fucking WoW and any kind of just console games together. Like every day, my schedule was pretty much go to school, hate it, come home and play video games with my cousin for like the whole day and then, you know, go to sleep, right? And he always had music playing in the background while we were kind of hanging out, whether it be kind of like Under Oath or Marilyn Manson or Alexis on Fire, As I Lay Dying, stuff like that. And at first I was like, that's fucking terrifying sounding because I was like 8. And I kind of just grew used to it, essentially. And it just became part of kind of my life because he always had music playing. And then he got Guitar Hero one day. It's a Guitar Hero story. And I played that and I was like, wow, this is amazing. And my cousin also like played guitar for all that time anyways. He didn't do anything like crazy techie or stuff, but he always played like kind of like classic rock songs and stuff on his guitar. He was pretty good. And yeah, I just kept playing Guitar Hero. I really liked it. And I was like, I kind of want to try this for real. My cousin already plays, you know, I was like 9 at the time. And, that was kind of it. I was lucky for my birthday. I got like this kind of cheaper blue Ibanez. I still don't know what the fuck the model was. I have no idea where it is.
Yeah. Probably a Geo.
Yeah. And, I essentially was able to take a few lessons to get started, and I just loved it. So that was kind of that. And I just took lessons for a year, maybe two, learning the basics, kind of beginner scales mode stuff. And then from there, it was just, I love music. I kept covering songs on my own, coming home from school. And instead of just playing video games, it would be video games and guitar. And that was pretty much my entire childhood. So
nice. That's awesome. Yeah, it's, I mean, I started playing guitar before I played Guitar Hero, but for me as well, and same with Johnny, like, we both were super into Guitar Hero, especially Guitar Hero 3 when we were younger. Yeah.
Dude, it's, like, Guitar Hero 2 was huge.
Oh, yeah.
Like, big time for me.
I think I got Guitar Hero 3 before I had Guitar Hero 2 for some reason. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't remember.
I thought it was interesting because for Guitar Hero 2, I think they might have done it for the first one as well, but they recorded all the songs themselves.
Oh, I didn't know.
Yeah, right. It was like cover songs, right? Or not all of them, but like some of them were covers. Like I remember Laid to Rest by Lamb of God was like a cover of Laid to Rest, and like the vocals were terrible, and everyone was kind of like, what the fuck? All right.
Yeah, and then they didn't do that for 3.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I just remember they had like Jordan by Buckethead on there.
Yeah.
And I was like, holy shit, this song is nuts. Who the fuck is this?
Yeah.
And I became obsessed with Buckethead after that. But yeah, like Guitar Hero, I think, was really important for a lot of like people our age, like younger, like finding it, it forces you to listen to these songs you probably would never listen to anyways. So then you're like, oh shit. Like, and they're very guitar influenced music, obviously. So that'll make you want to play more. Right.
Mm-hmm. For sure. And also it kind of gave you, I mean, like I remember when I was playing, like the first time you play Guitar Hero with more than one person, like when you have the two players or whatever, like that was just such a cool feeling because it was like the closest you could feel to like jamming with a friend without like actually knowing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And I think that that also definitely turned a lot of people on to wanting to start a band or learning a real instrument or whatever. Mm-hmm. Especially when like the full band came in and there was like drums, vocals, guitar, bass, everything like in rock band.
Yeah.
And yeah, it definitely kind of like inspired a whole generation of, like, I guess musicians that are probably around our age or maybe a little younger.
Yeah, definitely.
Do you have a go-to Guitar Hero song?
Oh my dude, it's been years. Like, I honestly should get Guitar Hero again and make like stupid ass videos with it, but been years, man. I think the song I always, obviously Sweet Child of Mine, I forget if that's on 2 or 3. A lot of the Guns N' Roses stuff. A few of, I think, was there any Bullet on guitar? Was there Hand of Blood?
No, it was Waking the Demon, I think.
Thinking Need for Speed Most Wanted. Yeah, so pretty much, anything to do with video games and metal is why I got into it, pretty much.
Gotcha.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, those are probably my favorite. And Through the Fire and Flames, screwing up on that nonstop. Fuck and yeah.
Dude, Close of Dover. Close of Dover.
Oh, yeah.
Dude, that song is
super good song.
Cool. Well, that's awesome. So then moving on from there, so that's kind of how you got started with listening to metal and gradually starting to play guitar. So before, this is still before you started your YouTube channel. So now you're playing guitar, you're into metal. So what did you do kind of like pre-YouTube, but after you started playing guitar, I guess?
So because, you know, after I took a few years of lessons, again, like I just loved music so much that I'd always go out and learn songs like through tabs and whatever means I could. And it was like the best feeling in the world to me to be like, oh my God, like, you know, like a year ago I'd listened to the song and now I can fucking play it. And it was so surreal to me to be able to do that. It was almost like a high, essentially. Right. So I just kept doing that and I kept learning songs and learning songs, just songs that I love. And while I was doing that, I was also kind of learning how to write and watching YouTube at the same time. So it was kind of all three of these things. And when I was watching YouTube, I watched guys like Killer Buckeye, like the OG cover
classic.
God. And the other guy, Finn Maxwell, I think, who was very similar to Killer Buckeye. They both did kind of the same stuff. That, as well as like all the instrumental artists, which I'm not sure if these are all the ones that were there at the time, like Shades of Black guitarist band, Angel Vivaldi, obviously. Mm-hmm. Scythia, modern day Babylon, like all those guys were a huge inspiration to me YouTube wise to do two things, to want to start writing as well as to use YouTube as maybe an outlet for my original music, actually. The covers were kind of an afterthought. I was just like, well, I saw a few people doing it. It looks fun. So I just kind of threw those on there for fun. But the whole point of my YouTube channel was pretty much only to release original music on it, my terrible original music on it. so yeah, that's how it kind of all got started.
Awesome. So when you started recording music, Johnny and I have kind of like funny stories about how shitty we used to record music. So for me personally, actually for both of us, it was almost the same. But going back to Rock Band and Guitar Hero actually as well. So you know how like Rock Band came with that like shitty USB mic?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So what I used to do is I used to duct tape that mic to like my 15 watt Line 6 Spider 2 and plug that into my computer. And like that's how I used to record guitar.
That's amazing.
And I think Johnny did the exact same thing, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, exactly the same. My drum situation was substantially more fucking backwater bullshit, though. Like, you might not even know what these are. I feel like I'm the only person that knows what this is, but they're called MyJam drumsticks. And you swing them in the air and they make drum noises. They're like plastic drumsticks.
Okay.
You know what I'm talking about?
I might have seen them.
I had never heard of them before
they
either.
They suck. They're brutal. But what I used to do was it had an aux cord on the back and I would use a quarter inch adapter. I'd plug it into my amp. I'd record it with my Rock Band mic and I would record every single bit of the drums separately. So the kicks are by themselves, snare, cymbals, everything. Super just like, it got the job done though. I didn't give a fuck. Whatever.
Yeah. So kind of going off of that, did you kind of have like a, like how did you start recording? Was it pretty ghetto like that? Or did you go straight to like a recording interface?
Oh, so there was a few steps of terribleness that happened here. So the first one was Audacity, just straight up recording in Audacity, like with my speaker mic.
Nice.
No drums. I thought I was making songs, but it was just random noise pretty much thrown in there. That was the first phase. Second phase was when I was like, oh, let's actually record. This guy uses Cubase on YouTube. Like, let's go buy Cubase and fucking use that. And to get my guitar tone, only freeware for like, I wish this was only for the start of it, but I used freeware for like 5 years of my guitar tone pretty much. Like Lapoo Cabin.
Oh, yeah.
Like that stuff. Yeah, all that stuff. Legion, all that stuff. And it did the job done. And yeah, so that's when it came to guitars, or I'd use my mic and plug it into like my little Vox amp, like, and I had no idea how to mic up anything, you know, so it all sounded awful. And then when it came to drums, I just started to learn how to program, but I didn't know how to actually program drums. I just knew that if you click this, it makes a kick noise. So instead of like quantizing and actually inserting the beats, I would use my mouse and click when I want a kick drum, and I'd be like, with my mouse, so you can hear.
Oh man!
And I also
so you would like do that in real time, like you would play through the song and like play it on
exactly
your keyboard, basically,
and create the drums. And I would do the snares too. I didn't know what cymbals were, so none of those songs ever had cymbals, which was so weird.
That's awesome.
And then I just kind of got a little better at all that stuff, and I learned how to actually program. But yeah, that's kind of my start with that. It was not good, and I still have those demos to scare the internet with one day. So yeah.
You ever think about maybe like fully redoing those songs, being like, this is what I wrote like fucking 10 years ago kind of thing?
Yeah, so I've had like different phases. I had that phase, which was like my new phase of writing stuff, which I was just getting into. You hear the clicking drums, and it was so bad. And then I had the phase after where I kind of knew what I was doing in terms of just getting sounds to come together and not sound the worst. I had a lot of those on SoundCloud, actually. I released music on SoundCloud far before YouTube. Not a lot of people know that. And I have thought many times of like going back to some of those SoundCloud songs and like giving them the justice that, you know, 14-year-old Nick deserves with some of those songs. Because some of them are decent. A lot of them are shit. But some of them are like, I wonder if I wasn't terrible at this at that time, what it would sound like. So yeah, I've definitely thought about that.
That'd be pretty cool. I mean, I know when I did, or when I hit like 100,000 subscribers for my like, my, you know, every YouTuber does their like 100K special. For mine, what I did was like, I went back and re-recorded my first ever original song that I did on YouTube.
That's awesome.
And I just like remade it and made it not sound like shit. And that was actually pretty fun to like, I mean, there was definitely some riffs in there that I was like, I would never write like this anymore, right. But it was still kind of cool to like go back in time and be like, oh shit, I remember, you know, sitting in my bedroom when I was whatever 16 writing this. Yeah. So
isn't that
kind of
cool though?
Yeah.
Isn't that cool though? Like you can go back and that's a whole different you that was like writing those songs, right? So you're like, you're writing music with like no reference. You're just doing it because you literally love doing it. And like, not saying we don't love doing it now, but like we're thinking about a lot more things now that
for
we write music.
Yeah, exactly.
So back then it's just like, well, I don't know. I just want to make breakdowns and like go woolly woo and, you know, finger tap and shit.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think that's really cool, man. Like to go back and check out those old SoundCloud days and maybe like pick a few songs and just rip at it and see what happens. Yeah.
I've thought about it. And I even had a name for the album. It was just going to be called The Lost Chapters. You know, the chapters that probably should have been burned instead, but they were just lost and I sadly found them.
They were lost.
Yeah, they were lost in my USB in the closet there. So yeah, no, but we're so lucky even as just kind of musicians to be able to like have those timestamps, you know, of where we were in life. And you can always go back and sometimes, you know, we need that kick in the ass to be like, oh, like this, everything sucks right now. And then you listen to one of your old demos and you're like, wow, life is pretty decent right now.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's also cool
you're
to be able
fine.
To see like how much progress you've actually made because, you know, as I'm sure everyone in the world feels this way, but it always feels like it doesn't really feel like you're progressing as you're doing it because you live it every single day. Right. But then if you go back in time, like 5 years and check out like some video or song on SoundCloud or whatever the case might be, something you did in the past and hearing like how much better you are now than you used to be, it's kind of, I don't know, it's pretty cool. And I've always liked that about YouTube is like I still have like tons of old videos on my channel from like 5, 6, 8 years ago, and going back and watching them again is just like, I don't know, it's cool. Like usually they're pretty bad, but it's fine. Like I don't know, it's interesting to see how different things are.
We have a scrapbook that's digitally so easily for us to just kind of go through, and it's not just a boring picture, it's like a real moment of, you know, for effort or something we've created, so it's
and
so
everyone cool. in the world can see it.
I'm sorry people that you see that. I apologize.
Have you seen Bana's like really old videos of when he doesn't have a beard or anything?
A few of them, dude, because I actually, a little off topic, but I actually started following Bana like a little bit before he started doing the Pop Goes Punk stuff, which was
Oh, shit.
And I was like, dude, this guy's fucking sick. Like, he's so cool. I love what he's doing. And you're a huge inspiration to my earlier days in YouTube, actually.
Oh, shit. That's
stuff.
Crazy.
So I saw a few here and there. Yeah, definitely. And don't worry. They're still amazing, man.
Thanks, man. I appreciate it.
He just looks so different, man. Like, he doesn't look like how he does like this. I love it. It's very, very, very funny.
It's like a whole other person.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%.
Well, we're going to move on to the next section here. So that's your early days, what got you into guitar, what got you into recording. So now we got a young Nick. He's on SoundCloud. Mm-hmm. He's making original music. So you started a YouTube channel, like you said, to kind of originally your idea was to push your original material. Mm-hmm. And then you said covers were kind of an afterthought.
Yeah.
So I guess, yeah, maybe just kind of expand on that a little more. And like what made you move more into covers versus trying to just do originals, or how exactly did that all work out?
So I was just doing covers again, just because it was an afterthought. It was fun. I just threw them on there. I was like, oh, I learned a song, like let's share it with people because people definitely care for some reason. Yeah. Like my 15-year-old terrible tone covering these songs and just ruining them. So I just throw them on there, and you know, they would do like okay, whatever, but the thing is they were gaining way more traction than anything of my original material. So I'm like, okay, you know, it's a way to, you know, people check out my cover and then they come see, oh, does he actually have music? And they see it's there, and you know, they get to see it at least, right? Instead of just throwing original music on there and it never being heard ever.
For sure.
So I kind of lean more into just doing that more often. And then I got to maybe, I don't know how many some covers, maybe 10 or so. And then after The Burial came out with Lost in the Static, and I believe this is the correct song that this happened for. And this was like kind of the first time I really covered like a new song really fast, right? And I uploaded it same day and all that shit. And it blew up for me at the time, right? Like I'm just a little kid and I got like fucking 5,000, 10,000 views. I'm like, what? I'm viral. Yeah. You know,
I'm quitting my job right now.
Yeah. Mom, dropping out of high school. I'm going to be a star. Okay. So that happened, and I was like, what, like, what, why? You know, I was very curious, like, why is it this? I'm like, is After the Burial just, like, the biggest band in the world ever, you know? and I was naive at the time. I never even really listened to After the Burial before I checked out that song. And that was the first, like, exposure I got to them. And people just, I noticed in the comments, were like, dude, how'd you do this so fast? How'd you do this so fast? And I was like, I just learned the song, you know, like, by ear, because there's no tabs, right? It's a new song. And I didn't think that was anything special because, again, it's not like I grew up playing with a bunch of different musicians or knowing how long it takes to learn a song or anything like that. So I just did it, and I was like, yeah, that's normal, right? And they're like, no. You know, like, that's something crazy doing it that fast. I was like, oh, okay. So then I kind of took that, and I was like, well, that did really well, learning a song really fast. Let's do that a few more times. And I got good results, too, and I was like, okay. And I kept just kind of playing into that, and I was like, maybe this is something special that nobody was really doing at this time. Like, and this is, again, like, this is a while ago, in terms of years ago. And I just kept doing that, and then I became known as the fast cover guy. And I played into that more while still writing original music, while, you know, in high school, I believe, or just about to start university, whatever the fuck it was. And that was it. That was my channel for 3 or 4 years. It was just covering new songs right away, playing into it, working on original music, hoping people listen to that. And that was the only content I made. Like, no reactions. There was none of this that I was doing at this time. No random styles video. No rip-off videos, you know.
Yeah.
No meme stuff. It was just, I never said a word in my single videos for like 3 years. It was just me playing a cover. So that's kind of how it all started. It was very, very weird, but like, it just kind of happened.
Yeah.
You found your niche, man.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That definitely makes a lot of sense to me. I mean, obviously from the YouTube perspective, like when you kind of realize like what you're doing differently, or like when you do that one video that works really well, you're like,
yeah,
how do I make that happen again? And that's like totally what YouTube is all about, is like you find that one or two things that are successful, and you're just like, I should probably replicate that.
Yeah.
And that sounds basically what you were doing there, whether it was consciously or subconsciously, you clearly realized it. And yeah, that's kind of, I don't know, I feel like kind of similar about like how I started with YouTube. Was once you kind of realize what works and what doesn't work, you just kind of naturally, you know, you want to succeed. So obviously you want to do more of the thing that did well.
Exactly.
And then same with you, where you're like, your hope is that you build that audience and the audience sticks with you to look at your other stuff
exactly.
that you maybe care about a little bit more. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely something that I've experienced as well. And yeah, maybe Johnny as well.
Yeah, for sure. And I also just like, because we all cover other people's music, like that's something that all three of us do.
Yeah.
And I don't think there's any shame in that. And there are like, I know that there's people that are like, oh, write your own stuff, do this, do that, or whatever. But I think there's a lot of importance in learning other people's songs, forcing yourself to learn these songs, learning definitely. Them as fast as you do. And it's a chops builder, man. Like, it only makes you a better person, right? Like, or a better guitar player. I don't know if it makes you a better person. I don't know. That's a you thing. But, like, as a guitar player, though, like, you have to admit, like, for everybody here, like, you've learned a song, and then you take what you've learned from that song and you put it towards your original material.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yeah.
I don't think, I've never thought that covering stuff was, like, stupid. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
You find your niche, you do it. People watch covers, they like it, they want to hear people do it. Just fucking do it. Who cares, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's,
I mean, they're all. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Nick.
Yeah, and it's so funny. Even nowadays, like, I have people commenting on my covers nowadays, going like, "Yeah, release original music, dude." And I'm like, guys, I have like five albums. Like, really? Like,
yeah.
Like, and but yeah, no. To that, it's like covers are one of the biggest things. I even tell my students, I'm like, guys, you want to get better, learn other people's music. That's experience. That's like working, you know, in terms of working on your guitar skills and stuff. How else 100%. Are you gonna, discover new techniques, new music, new theory? That's how I learned. You know, other than, again, a few years of lessons, which were like, I learned basic stuff. How I learned all of my theory knowledge and any of that was through seeing a song, being like, oh, I'm used to these kind of patterns. What's this random note they're throwing in here? And then exploring that and being like, oh, that's actually a scale. And then I know how to utilize that in my own music. And even when I go back to my own music, I see the phases of what I was listening to at that time directly in those songs.
Right.
And it's so hilarious. But yeah, no, it's so important.
So we kind of talked about this at NAMM a little bit when we were chatting, because I'm a theory guy myself, and I really like applying theory to what I write and, like, you know, working on stuff. So did you, you were just kind of saying, did you kind of learn more about theory in a self-taught way? Like, you would listen to songs, find out you're playing a lead or whatever, and you're like, I want to know what that is, and you would just, like, look it up and find it?
Curiosity taught most of me. Again, I had a very good teacher, credit to him. He taught me, like, the basic stuff that I needed to know. Like, just a simple, what is a minor, like, the minor scale pentatonic, and then showing me modes. But even at that time, I didn't understand the point of those things. It was just like, okay, here's scales. And that was coming from, again, he was a very good teacher. But in terms of being able to understand what they mean, how to apply them all, everything I learned was my mind going, what is that? And my curiosity is driving me crazy. And I literally pick up my guitar at that moment, whatever I'm listening to, even if it's background music, right? I keep that melody in my mind. I'm like, what is that melody? How are they creating that specific dark or happy type melody? I've never heard that before. Yeah. Pick up my guitar, try to recreate it. And then I'm like, oh, this is maybe creating a scale or a specific pattern. And then I internalize that into some kind of knowledge that I use and adapt to the base knowledge that I already have. So yeah, no, that's how I learned the majority of my knowledge, is literally learning people's music.
Nice. Dude, that's so awesome. Like, I think that gives all the more reason, like, for people to really, I mean, doing lessons and stuff, going to school is great, but there's so much that you can learn on your own. Like Ben and I were talking about this last podcast too. Like, people have so much to, you know, at their fingertips now that they can literally look up anything they want and they can learn it right away just via the internet. And like, when we were growing up, we didn't necessarily have that.
No, not
like,
at all.
You know, finding, like, plugins for guitars or drum programs, anything like that. But especially theory too. Like, you can just look up, like, what's the circle of fifths? What does that mean? Like, what is this? How do I apply, you know, some scale in a particular song? Like, you don't have to pay, like, an astronomical amount to go to school if, like, you can't afford to do that. You can learn stuff on your own and, like, self-teach yourself, basically.
Yeah, yeah, and even doing that, like, it's helped me actually understand it in a more logical way than... Because what I really didn't want to do, and because I teach, right, is tell my students, like, here's the theory and teach it kind of like every you know, person that went to music school teaches it, like the very organized, like, start with your major scale, you know, things like that. I like to teach it a very kind of practical. I'm like, okay, what do you like playing? What type of music are you into? And then let's build the knowledge based on that, and showing them more pattern oriented things that link together and why they make sense together. Because that's what, that's how it clicked for me, because I could have even myself gone to school and got to music school and try to learn that stuff, and I probably never would have absorbed it, and I would have actually probably hated it because it would have felt like school, right? Instead of like,
that's kind
of
how I felt when I tried.
Exactly, yeah. So that's why I, even when I'm teaching students, or even when I did that one video of scales and modes, I try to do it a very, like, practical, slightly different mindset, because I know that mindset that's even being taught a lot, even to this day, is still based on the classical era of music, right? Like, when orchestra and stuff was the only thing around, it's like, guys, we're on guitar now. You know what I mean? Like, these are different instruments. These are different ways. Music is different nowadays. So having a bit of that different perspective, I think, helps a lot. And I've seen so many students who are like, dude, like, I've had this teacher forever and he keeps teaching me this stuff and it just doesn't make sense. I'm like, okay, I'm gonna make this make sense for you in like 20 minutes. Because when it comes down to it, music theory isn't that crazy. It's just, it just has to kind of click in some fashion. And then it's like, oh my God, like, okay, I get it now, right?
So, and it also has to be interesting for the student, which sounds like something that you're very clearly aware of. Because again, if you go to let's say a classroom and some guy is just like, this is a major scale and you just have to learn it just cause, then you're kind of like, if you're like me, I'm just like, I don't care about
it. It has
at all.
To be fun. Exactly. It has to be fun. If it's not fun, it's not going to stay in their head. They're not going to want to do it. And that's, I tell my students that, I'm like, guys, going up and down your scales, once you learn them, even if they make sense, that's not fun. Apply them. When you're jamming, literally have a backing track in the background. Literally try to learn some songs that use this stuff, because that's going to be the thing that's like, oh my God, that's so cool. I want to do that. How do I do that? Oh, well, now I have the tools to do it. Okay. Now practice has a purpose. It's not practice just to get better. It's practice because I want to achieve a goal. Right. So it's really cool.
That's a great way to look at it.
Definitely. So kind of going off of that, so I guess the next really big change in your career would be, what made you finally decide, you know, to pursue YouTube as a full-time career? Because I know, like you were saying, you were doing all this YouTube stuff while you were in high school and university. So what made you decide to do YouTube instead of those things, basically?
It was halfway through, I think, university. And again, I went to university. A lot of people don't know I have a bachelor in fucking commerce. Like I finished it actually, and I've never used it in my whole life. Right. Pretty much waste of money. But the thing I learned is how much I just didn't like that. You know, I already hated school growing up because it was just always sit there and listen and regurgitate information that the teacher or people teaching didn't make it didn't have logical real life links to it. It was just learn this mathematical formula because you have to. And I hated that. I never liked that way of thinking. Like, well, how do I use it? What's the point of this? Because that's how I personally learn things a lot easier, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought, okay, I'm finally going to university. Like, none of this bullshit anymore. And I was like, wait, it's the same thing. It's just harder now. And you have to pay for it. And the big thing for me was, again, because I was in business, I had a bunch of different business courses, like accounting, marketing. I went to a marketing course. And the dude literally through the whole course never talked about social media marketing. And it's this older dude, and I'm like, okay, I'm paying money for this right now. We're in the age of technology, and this is really what I'm paying to learn. Like, this is pathetic to me in this sense, right? So I was like, I'm gonna get nowhere with this, and best case scenario, I'm gonna go get a bookkeeping job, work 9 to 5, which again, hey, anyone who does that, that's awesome. Fuck yeah, that's a hard grind, you know what I mean? That's a tough thing to do. And I just didn't want that. You know, I didn't want to make somebody else money, if that makes sense. I didn't just want to work for somebody else to make it so their dreams come true, regardless of where I worked. I wanted to be my own boss. I wanted to be an entrepreneur and make my own dreams and any vision I had come true, because I knew I was creative enough at that point to do something with my life. And I was like, you know, university is not my path, but I'm almost done. Let's just finish it. And then when I'm done, I'm going to give music my all. And within a year of that time, if I fail, I tried. You know, the dream was tried. I can at least look back on my life and be like, I tried. But I got lucky. And in that year, I fucking pushed so hard after I graduated. And I got results. And I was able to finally be self-sufficient and pay the bills and get by. And I was like, holy shit, I'm living the dream, literally. But yeah, it all stemmed from just I loved music so much. And I wanted to do something different, special, and I just thought it was the natural route to take. So
that's awesome, nice. Man. And yeah, that's I kind of had a not the same, but like a similar thing where I went through high school, finished that, and then I went to university as well. And I was actually in university for I think I was there for like 6 years or something like that. Yeah. And I finished as well. But so I was kind of doing the same thing as what you were doing, where I was still doing YouTube like in between all this stuff. But I didn't think that I would ever be able to do YouTube full time. So I finished my university degree thinking like, okay, well, I'm just going to get a job and that'll be it forever, which was fine at the time. Mm-hmm. And then I worked full time 9 to 5 for 2 or 3 years. And then, you know, it was during working 9 to 5 that I kind of realized like, damn, man, this is not what I want to do for the rest of my life. And similar to what you were just saying, where I finally kind of realized like, okay, well, you know, I'm not entirely sure if this YouTube thing is going to work, but I should try it now. And worst case scenario, like you said, if I fail, like at least in 20 years from now, I can look back and be like, hey man, I gave it my all. It didn't work, but I tried, instead of, you know, just taking the safe route and continuing to work at my 9 to 5 job where I was guaranteed X amount of money, X amount of vacation days, blah, 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 blah. It was like the easier option for sure, where it was like, I know I'll be safe if I do this, but if I never try to do the full-time music thing in, you know, in the future, I'm going to really, really regret it. Mm-hmm. And also, of course, as you get older and as time goes on, it gets harder and harder and harder to give up that full-time job try music, because, you know, as you get older, you have more responsibilities and financial dependencies and all that. So yeah, it's obviously like the younger you start, the easier it is really before you have all that life you have to keep up with and bills and whatnot. So
that's not living, man. You got to shoot your shot.
Exactly.
Yeah, man.
Why not, right? I tried to get Andrew to do it a year before he actually ended up doing it, because he was talking about it so much. And I was like, man, you can do it.
Yeah.
You just need to do it. You know, you need to take that next step and do it.
It's scary.
It was very scary.
I totally get it. I 100% get it. Mm-hmm. I just wanted him to do it because I'm like, fuck it, man, you're going to kill it. And then eventually it happened, but it took a year, which is cool. Just get that financial base and, like, you know, play it safe. And then when you're ready to do it, just fly at it, right?
Mm-hmm. For sure. It's a scary thing. And the thing, like you said, it's like if you have a job and it doesn't go well, it's like, okay, well, whatever. Like, that's not my bad. Like, the job, you know, the business broke up or whatever. It's like, that's not on you, you know, and you get that stable paycheck. But it's like when it's on you and you're like, I failed, it's like the scariest bitter pill that you might have to realize. It's like, this was no one else did this. This was me. You know, I gave something my all and I couldn't finish it. And that's like, that's a nightmare for so many people that they don't even attempt to do it. And I understand that because it's fucking scary, you know?
For sure.
You can't blame anyone else but yourself when you fail when you're doing like YouTube or something like that.
Yeah. So. But at the same time, there are so many people out there that want to do something like what we're doing. Mm-hmm. And they don't do it because they're scared of failing. So it's kind of like, it's kind of ironic in a way because, you know, it's like their own fear of failure is what kind of made them fail. You know what I mean? Like, who knows? Like, if they would have just said fuck it and tried, maybe they would have been successful. But the thing is, they're too scared of failure to even know if it was a possibility in the first place.
Yeah, that's the thing that was huge for me because I grew up with that thing instilled in me. And again, not to hate on school or anything. There's some things that you, hey, if you're going to be my doctor, you better have fucking gone to school. You know what I mean? Like, and got the proper things done. But it instills such a thing of like, of failing. Like if you do bad on a test, like you just feel like shit, you know what I mean? And things like that, that I had that at such a young age that it was always so scary to fail something, right? That you didn't want to, you know, take any risks or anything. And then I just got lucky that when I was in university, I was like, wait, I don't care if I fail. You're supposed to, you know, that's how you learn is when you fail at things. Right.
For sure.
So that mindset was like that huge click personally, at least for me, that I was like, fuck it, I can do this too. Even if I fail, that's okay. But at least I tried. Right.
Did you have a strong support base from your family when it came to you, like, moving on to YouTube and stuff? Were they apprehensive or, like, what was that like?
So my mom was always like, you finish your fucking degree pretty much, and then you can do what you want in life, but you're finishing that shit. And I was like,
right.
Okay. I kind of did that to, you know, give her that peace of mind. She deserved it. You know, she's always supported my music in terms of, like, when I was young, I'd have these little shitty demos and I'd be like, mom, come listen. You know, I wrote this when I was like 13 or 14. And she'd be like, wow, you know, like that fake, like, wow kind of thing. Right.
This is going right on the fridge.
Yeah. This is going right on the fridge. So cool. You know, well, what'd you call your song? Kill 'em All. Oh, Cena. And Cena means the sun in our language. Right. So she'd be like, oh, gotcha. Cena. Okay. That music, you know, that devil music. And I'd be like,
Yeah,
but she'd always like, even though she knew she wasn't a fan of that music and screaming and any of that shit, she'd always like kind like support it. So be like, okay, do your thing, like you know, that's fine. But stay in school, right? And then recently, you know, when I finished, she was like, you know, she's grown accustomed a little more to the music. Like I literally show her some of my music now, and like I use her as a critique, like a kind of try to be non-biased, because she is musically gifted. Like, she actually plays piano really well. Nice. But like, she never took it anywhere or anything, and she's one of the people in my family pretty much that has that musical talent. So she can tell when things are on and off and what musically kind of fits together and shit. So I even to this day I use her as like, I show her a track and be like, what do you think? And she's kind of just grown used to screaming and all that, and she has a better understanding of it. So now that she understands the music a little more, she's much more like, you're like, fuck yeah, like, you know, do your thing, like, and plus, like, as long as you're doing well and you're not going to be homeless, like, go for it. So it was definitely a huge hurdle in that sense of, like, she didn't like the music, and she was scared I was going to drop out of school and all that shit. But once it passed that hump, she's, like, been super supportive of it, and I've been so lucky for that.
That's really good, man.
Mm-hmm.
But, and I think a thing is, too, that we have to realize is, like, our parents are from a completely different generation, right? Like, there are people that obviously understand, like, what YouTube is and, like, that people can build careers off of the internet.
Yeah.
But sometimes explaining that concept to, like, I'm sure you've all, like, gone to, like, a family dinner before.
Oh, yeah.
You know what I mean? And, like, your uncles or aunts or grandparents are like, ah, how's that music internet shit going?
How's your little music going?
Right? Yeah.
It's like, you know what, it's like it has to be like a proof in the pudding kind of thing for them, right? You have to show them that what you're doing is you're not only like loving it, but you're also, you know, living off it too. Yeah. Right. And I think that's important for them to, you know, eventually understand. Right. And then they're like, oh, you're loving what you're doing and you're making money too. So,
yeah.
I mean, how can you not be happy for your son or anything like that?
Exactly. Yeah. And I never put it like, maybe when I was younger, I definitely put it against my mom, how she wouldn't like be as supportive. But in terms of like, when I got older, I started to understand, like, I mean, yeah, if I was a parent, I want my kid to have the least risky path in life. Right. For sure. I don't want him to, I just want to know he's going to be okay, that I don't have to think that there's even a little percentage he won't. Right. Yeah. So I get that. And obviously being a YouTuber is, it's not the most risk-free job.
definitely not.
Right. So I completely understand that mindset. And again, she doesn't, like, these parents don't know what YouTube is, the internet, just like, you know, Johnny yeah. said. So, yeah, I get that mindset now. But I think, you know, as just, you know, the kids start growing up even more and more, it's going to be a little more like, the parents are going to be a little more accustomed to it. And they're going to be like,
for sure. Oh, for sure.
You know, yeah, go do stupid TikTok dances and go be famous. You know, my 13-year-old kid, like, I'm sure yeah. that's going to be the norm one day. So,
I mean, like, yeah, that's basically how I felt about it, too, was when I was like, before I went full time with it, I remember, especially while I was in university, feeling kind of frustrated with my parents, because they were definitely pushing me to do school, finish your degree, and get a job. And that was it. Whereas I, like, again, because it was before I was actually making good money on it, but I knew the potential was there. I was like, I know I'm only making like $100 a month now, but, you know, because I'm in university and working a job and doing this, I'm like, imagine if I had all this other time and I could put it into this thing, how much more money I would make. Like, maybe it would work. But like, getting them to kind of understand that was very, very, very hard until, you know, the last year of my full-time employment, when I was still working 9 to 5, but then in the background still pushing YouTube. And then it was like, hey, I'm working 9 to 5, but I'm also still making like a decent amount of money on the side from this thing. So again, like, for my parents, I think it was honestly really like, once the money started coming in, that they were like, oh, okay, well, maybe this actually does make sense. For better or for worse, I don't know. But yeah, now that I'm doing it full time, they definitely are much more supportive, because they get, like, it's very clearly like a legitimate career path, I guess is what I'm trying to say. And again, as Johnny was saying, like, this is obviously a totally new thing that like didn't exist even 10 years ago, really. So I don't blame them at all for not being confident in it, because I'm sure if I was, you know, like you were saying, if I had a kid, I would not want them to be taking this like super risky new career path that's never really been done before and hasn't really been proven, because it's new and blah 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 blah. So yeah, it's just a totally new thing. And yeah, now that like parents of the next generation are growing up with this stuff, so
yeah,
like you said, like there, it's going to be like way more common and way more of a normal thing. So it's interesting for sure.
Hey, and look at both of you now, man. Like, I'm fucked. I don't have a job, but you two are doing great. You can work from home. This is just a beautiful time. You can get so much shit done.
You had to take it that way, Johnny.
Oh, I'm going to bring it up until the apocalypse is over, baby.
Fair enough. It's funny that you say that, though, because that was also, I remember, like, another thing that my parents would say to me, or not even just my parents, but everyone would be like, what would you do if YouTube doesn't work out? And it's kind of ironic, especially now, because I remember being like, well, it's the same fucking thing as going to a 9-to-5 job. Like, you could go to your job tomorrow and your boss could just be like, hey, it's not working out. You have 2 weeks. Go fuck yourself.
I was always more scared of that than YouTube not working. I was scared of, oh, like, I work at this company forever and now I'm fired and I'm screwed, instead of, you know, at least I have control of if I fail when I do this.
Exactly. Right. It's kind of an ironic thing. But again, because it's so much more common to work for an employer, that it's like a hard thing to, I don't know, it's like a hard thing to grasp. But it's really the same thing. Like, either way is pretty much just as risky. Mm-hmm. Because again, because you worked at a company for 10 years doesn't necessarily mean anything, because that company is motivated by money. So if they're not working out with you, they're just going to fire you and find someone new.
Exactly.
And that's that. Whereas with YouTube or being self-employed, like, it's almost the same, because, in fact, it might be less risky, because you can, like, see it coming.
Yeah.
If you're not doing well in the business, like, you already know you're not doing well in the business. It's not like some manager who is lurking in the background seeing you not working out and is plotting firing you for weeks and you just have no idea and are blindsided. Mm-hmm. So, I don't know. It's weird, man.
Yeah, and there's something, like, really important that I wanted to get across by doing this podcast with like people like yourself, Nick, is so that people who might not understand how hard you guys work can now get in and figure out what your guys' process is and actually realize, like, these YouTube guys that are just, like, playing guitar and being silly and shit, they actually work their asses off. And, like, I think there's a lot of people that don't really, like, realize that and judge people very harshly.
Oh, definitely.
Even though they don't understand what, you know, both of you do and how hard you actually work and how hard it is to maintain a YouTube channel and stay consistent, you know, like, it's crazy, man. I'm glad that, like, I really hope that people learn stuff from, you know, us talking to you and, like, other people moving forward. Like, I don't know. I think it's important.
Yeah. And also maybe motivate people to give it a try because they realize that it wasn't like me and Nick just, like, out of the blue were successful on YouTube. Like, we both have been grinding at this for years and years and years. And then it was like, finally, it's like, okay, I still don't know if this is going to work, but yeah. I'm at least going to try. Like, it wasn't like we had it easy by any means. It wasn't like we just overnight went viral and we're like, hey, I guess I'm famous now. Like, just because, you know, like, dude, that's not how it worked at all.
It surprises me that I always see this number randomly. I have like 800 plus videos and I'm like, when? Right? Yeah. It's just like, that just went by, dude. That was just nonstop.
Do you ever see videos you've done in the past and be like, I don't even remember making this? Because you make like what, like 3 videos a week usually?
Around 3, yeah. Oh, definitely.
It's a lot, man.
Yeah, I've gone through my backlog, and again, I take those moments where I have to humble myself. You know what I mean? Not that I'm not a humble person. I try my best to be. And my girlfriend definitely keeps me in check by making jokes about me and shit like that. Yeah.
And all of my friends.
Yeah, yeah. And all my friends just like always keep making sure. And I love that because I want to stay in check. I never want that number to literally mean anything in terms of who I am. I'm still that fucking kid who's, I'm not 14, but who is, you know, the same mindset of that 14-year-old kid in my room who just didn't like school, but I love music, and I'm just making music and sharing that shit because I fucking love it, and that's it, right? But, you know, I definitely go back, and I'm like, oh, I made this. That's cool. Oh, I made this. Oh, I have no idea or recollection of this, and it's a weird feeling seeing some of those. I'm like, did someone else upload that from me? Like,
Or even, like we were talking about earlier, when you go back and listen to that really old music that you wrote when you were, whatever, 15, 16.
Yeah.
Like I know I listened to my old music and I'm like, why did I do that? Like, I would never write a part like that ever now. So it's just so weird hearing it's like we were saying, like, it's like a time capsule. It's going back to how your mind worked when you were, you know, 5 years ago. And it's just weird. I don't know.
I do love staying in touch with that side though, even though regardless of my younger years being not as like great. Cause like I hated everything. I hated school and all that shit. All I had was music. I love keeping that mindset because it brings me a better perspective of my current mindset of like, wow, things are really like, I'm living the fucking dream. Like, shut the fuck up, Nick. Never complain, because this is what like little Nick like would not believe. Like, I'd wake up and dream about this and I'd be like sad that it wasn't real. And now it's like, oh, this is real life, you know? So,
for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. So moving on from the YouTube side of things, obviously that's your main thing. But you also have a project with Andy Sizek called Termina, as we mentioned earlier. So talk to us a little bit about that, because I know you worked with Andy on a bunch of YouTube collabs. So what made you kind of start writing original music with him?
So Termina started actually originally, and again, I would say it started with Andy because that's when we actually started doing things like actually making like music. It technically started with Ezekiel Pearson of Down and Dirty, ex Down and Dirty.
Okay.
He was covering some, I covered Down and Dirty when they released Heaven Sent and whatnot, and I kind of knew of him. And then, you know, he left and they were having all their bullshit and whatever. And he messaged me. He was like, hey, dude, you like want to do something? And I'm like, like what? You know, because I just, all I had was Nick Nocturnal stuff and YouTube at the time. I never dreamed about having like a band, even though Termina isn't, it's still not like a proper touring band. It's like we're a digital thing making it happen. And yeah, I was like, oh. And I was like, you know what? Like, I know the style of music he does, you know, that Down and Dirty style of music. It's modern metalcore, but it just never has made it. All those bands that have tried it always have some drama between them that they break up or the label hates them. And I'm like, I can do this easily and we can do it right. And it's just going to be two people. No bullshit. No, like we're actually going to release music. And I was like, yeah, like, let's try it. Ezekiel's a great vocalist. So we tried it. I started writing. And Ezekiel, you know, super nice guy. I'm still good friends with him to this day. He was just a busy dude because, you know, he's a tattoo artist. And we never really got any vocal demos of anything done. And I had, like, 4 instrumental stuff done at that time. And I was like, it's been a year, dude. Like, you know, like, I don't think this is going to work. And it was kind of unfortunate because I really did want it to work with him because I think what he had was special and the songs would really fit what he had. And I was like, well, fuck, okay, you know, that didn't work out, but I'm not going to sit around here on tracks. What do I do with these tracks? They're not too basic, but they're not like Nick Nocturnal tracks in terms of, like, there's not leads and stuff everywhere. They're like modern metalcore.
Like, they were made to have vocals.
Exactly, right. You know, I'm not going to start throwing my, like, little girly screams on there right now. It's just not going to happen, right? And pretending to sing. So I was like, what do I do? And I was like, well, if I was personally going to start a band without somebody coming to me, who would have I picked? Andy. Within 1 second. I'm like, I hit him up. Same, like, 10 seconds later. I hit him up on Facebook. Andy, hear the tracks. Let's be in a band. Do you want to do this or not? I know you have like 50 bands already, but like we work well together. There's no bullshit. It's always just, you know, we know we're right on each other's. Like we have that synergy, as you could kind of say, like he writes something. I know what he wants. I write something. He knows what I want. And we just make it work. And we blend our styles so weirdly well together. So and he hit me back a few minutes later. He's like, this is sick. Let's do it. And that was it. That was kind of the start of Termina. He started writing. And so far we have a good chunk of maybe an album done. A lot of instrumentals are done. A lot of instrumentals are done. and 70% of them have vocals tracked on them. So that is the history of Termina.
Okay.
And we essentially just picked Lucid because it was the first song we finished together. And we were like, this is sick as fuck. Let's throw it out there. And that was that. And that was a song I didn't have left over from Ezekiel, so it was still like it was like a very me and Andy track. It wasn't like a kind of it didn't have that other bit of vibe,
right?
In it.
Yeah.
Even though Andy has written over some of those songs that I have written before he was in the band, and like he made them his own, and they sound very much like Termina now, which is awesome. But yeah, that's why we picked Lucid, and we have another one that we've already picked the single, and we're filming the music video for at home.
Nice.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
With good a old white screen background. It's going to be green screen effects with the white screen. We got our dude Patrick. You guys know Patrick.
Oh, nice.
Oh, hell yeah.
Working magic. Beautiful. On this. And the song.
It'll look great.
Yeah. We have a cool variety of stuff. We have Lucid, I'd say, is the best middle ground of what our music is in terms of like it has the heavy stuff and it has some of like the melodic singing, you know, to kind of catch you in. And it has a little bit of techie underlying guitar work, but also structurally driven and a little bit more like riff groove based stuff going on, right? So that's the very good middle ground. We have some songs that are just pure fucking deathcore songs. Like they are just heavy as balls. And then we have some songs that are chill Deftones-y songs. You know what I mean? So yeah, Loose has a good middle ground. And the next song is going to be along that middle ground as well. And we should be having that out next month. Hopefully.
Oh, yeah. Awesome. I'm excited to hear that.
He's such a multifaceted vocalist. It's crazy.
Yeah.
Dude, yeah. When I found Andy, right? I just...
You're going to be a star, dude.
You're going to be a star. No, I found him on YouTube because he was doing a cover of Make War for last... I always forget the fucking band name. The one with Skrillex. yeah, that one. You know.
Yeah.
And he did that and I was like, who the fuck is this guy who just did a cover so fast? And, you know, he's getting all the attention for this cover. God. So I added him on Facebook. And he's like, dude, like, I know your stuff. I watch you. I was like, oh, you're a pretty nice guy. You know, and we just got talking. And then I watched some of his other covers. And I noticed he did, like, Amir covers. And he did these fucking lows. And I was like, how did that noise come out of you? You know what I mean? Like, all these crazy, insane vocals. And I was like, Jesus, you're a monster, dude. And then Linkin Park came out with Heavy, and I was like, not my thing, but let's do, I wanted to do a metal cover of it, like a heavier song. I hit up Andy, and he's like, okay. And he just threw it back to me, and it was insane. He had, like, North Lane lows on that shit, and it sounded so cool. And that was the first cover we did together. It did pretty well. And then we did a couple more, and then we did Rockstar by Post Malone. And that was, like, our big thing together. That thing is... I don't even know how many views is that. It's over 2 million on his channel, I think.
Crazy. Nice.
And that's when a song that we wrote, like, we covered. But we rewrote the instrumental and the vocals. And it just felt like something was so special there that, you know, me and Andy kind of had that I was like, this is a guy that I like, this is my vocalist in some facet. I don't care how we're going to, like, I don't know how it's going to happen, if we're going to be in a band together one day or if we're just always going to cover songs, but this is the dude I need to always work with forever. He gets it. You know what I mean? He's like a chameleon. He can do whatever fucking style you need him to, which I love. So yeah, that's the story of, I guess, me and Andy also finding each other.
That's awesome.
Nice. Dude, his, I always watched his stuff, but when he did that Sumerian audition thing, it was just like, nobody else can compete with this guy. Like, it was so good. It was so creative. It was what nobody else was doing. He, like, did every single aspect of his vocal range when he did it, and I was like, fuck, man, this is so good. I'm glad that he redid it. I'm glad that he re-recorded it and did it completely new, because it sounds so fucking
awesome. Dude, that's amazing. Yeah, and I saw that, and a lot of people don't know. Like I met with Andy because we were filming Lucid, right? And, dude, that, like, that's how he sounds. There's no bullshit there. Like,
not at all.
Yeah, and when he screams, it's so funny, because even when we were filming Lucid, right, like, sometimes he would mouth it, and then randomly he would scream some of the parts, and that actually shit my pants. Like, I'd have to, like, I'd be scared, because it would just be so loud and powerful right in front of you, and you're like, Jesus, dude. Like, chill the fuck out. But no, like, he can do that shit legit, and that's why he's such a talent that just, I'm so glad now he's finally getting recognition, like, with Monuments and stuff, and I hope Termina also, you know, does that, because he's such a talented dude, and I love working with him.
Awesome. Did you know about him joining Monuments before it was announced? Did he tell you anything?
Yeah.
That's amazing. That's so dope. Good for him, man.
Imagine if he was like, no, I was totally surprised.
I was totally...
Wait, what?
We actually don't talk to each other at all.
He's in Monuments? I knew. And then it's so cool because I grew up listening to Monuments too. Like, I was an instrumental gent kid, right? That's what I grew up listening to. And, you know, to see him lead that band, and now, like, I'm buddies with Ollie and John too, and just talking to them, and they're so cool, and I'm so proud that he's doing that stuff, because he's such a badass. And he also has Makari and Wander and all that stuff, and Termina. You know, it's like,
he's a busy boy.
He's a busy dude, but it's so cool because they're all different genres. Like, Monuments isn't Termina, even though they're both heavy. Just like Makari isn't Wander, even though they're both more chill. And I'm sure he loves that because he has a lot of creative outlets to fuck around with, but
for sure.
It's great, and I'm super happy for that dude, man.
So do you think, this kind of leads into our next question, but do you think you'll ever do this band live once the apocalypse is over? Do you think you'll be able to do it live, or want to?
I would love to one day, if it makes sense. Like, if the band for some reason just pops the fuck off, you know what I mean? And I'm not expecting it to. I'm not saying it's going to. I always hope it does, right? I always hope for the best. But I'm not expecting, like, oh, this, you know, we're going to release an album and it's going to do super, super well, regardless of how much I market it on my channel with the end of every my videos, or how much Andy markets it. If it's good music and it works and people like it and it just happens, it happens. And if it happens and there's just enough demand for us to see it live, like a good amount, that it's worth us both, like, leaving home for 2 weeks. Like, leaving home for 2 weeks for me, other than the fact of leaving my family for 2 weeks, which makes me super sad. Like, that's, I'm leaving my job for 2 weeks of YouTube, which, I can't just stop for 2 weeks, right? If it's ever that worth it, I'd love to. You know, we'll hit up a session drummer, who the fuck cares, a tour drummer, a tour bassist. We'll hit up Baina, for fuck's sake. Come tour with us, bro.
Sounds good to me.
Dude, yeah, and we'll just perform everything live, and the best part is we also have, like, our covers. Like, my most favorite moment would ever be to play a set, and it's so working well, you know, the dream... And then we do some kind of encore, and we do Rockstar, because people just we just know they'd want to hear that. It would just be such a fun and special moment for everybody, you know. And I'd love to do it, but I'm not gonna force it, and neither is Andy, because we both agreed this is not a touring band. Only if for some reason it is so worth it to do it, we will do it.
Okay, so we got one final question for you, which kind of ties everything we've talked about so far together, and that is just like, what is your outlook on, well, I guess both the music scene and YouTube today? Like, has it changed a lot since you started YouTube, or is it just the same where you're just still having fun making videos, or, you know, are you a little more jaded now, or how's it going?
In terms of my, like, how I'm feeling, like, I'm definitely, I'm more confident in what I'm doing, and it's just fun. Like, it's still, again, why I do this is because I love it, and that's it. If I ever stop loving it, like, I stop doing it, but it's instilled in me. It's in me. There's no way, like, that this will just die randomly unless I let it. die, if that makes sense, right? So no, it's kind of the same thing, but I also can make a living off of it, and that's like almost the bonus. That's so amazing. That also makes me want to give even more to it, because it's like, this is everything. This isn't like I have to split my time between this and then I have to go make money so I can fund this. This is like, this is funding this. Mm-hmm. So I have to give every single piece of me every fucking day I can and just go all with it. And it's definitely, you know, helped over the years, and it's become a little easier in terms of just the accessibility of YouTube becoming more of acceptable in the music industry, I think. You know, it's not just as much now like, oh, you're a YouTuber, like, fuck you. It's like, oh, yeah, you exist. You're a musician, too, right? You know, like, people have a little more respect, I think, from YouTubers, which I love seeing that. But again, I grew up in the era when no one gave a fuck about YouTubers. So it doesn't faze me if somebody's like, oh, you're just a YouTuber. I'm like, yeah. You know what I mean? Sure. But no, it's a lot more accepted now. And it's like new era of like the quarantine and stuff. It's a lot more accepted because bands, y'all can't fucking tour. I wonder where they're going, what they're doing now. Oh, let's go on YouTube. Let's do Twitch. Yeah, no shit. You know, like, and that's also bringing all those crowds to YouTube and Twitch. And I love seeing that integration of just the music community, like not mattering which platform or how you're doing it. It's just, hey, you listen to music, you make music. We're all fucking a part of this shit. So let's bring everyone to wherever it has to be, and just people will listen and everyone wins in that case. Bands discover more people, more music, kids discover that, more bands, more music. And bands can connect with their fans better. And I love that. And honestly, like Matt Heafy of Trivium is like the most iconic thing, I think, person doing that right now on Twitch. Yeah, like, and he's definitely the nicest fucking dude. He's like, shout out to this guy, shout out to this guy. He just shows everybody the love. And he's at the top of the food chain in the metal scene. And that's so cool to see a leader like that come in on Twitch and be like, guys, this is acceptable, you know, like, you know, it's okay to watch YouTubers and Twitch streamers, like, and like metal, right? And I love seeing that, and I hope it integrates more like that, because that's honestly the point. On the other side, it's harder, you know, it's a little saturated. It's like, if you're just starting out, do it, but good luck, man. It's so hard to do it. Everyone's doing this shit nowadays. Everyone wants to be fucking famous and make, you know, $10 of AdSense, you know, for some reason.
Especially if you're starting a podcast during the quarantine, am I right?
Podcasts are definitely, I like podcasts. They're so chill. It's just a chill format, even though like everyone's doing it now. Like I love it. I love hanging out and just, I like talking, you know, just talking unfiltered, no bullshit. You know, that you can, you know, make videos and all that stuff if you want to filter yourself and make types of content. I like just real conversations where you just hang out and say what's up. You know, you get to see behind the scenes a little bit. And I think people watching who are not in that world at all learn so much more from that than watching a goofy, you know, meme video that I'd make instead.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Well, they want to, like, see you candidly, right? Like, they want to know that, like, you're just a fucking dude, right? Like, you're not just this, like, internet personality at all times. You can just chill out, have a conversation, be chill. That's why I like podcasts so much, man. Like, you just get to chat. Like, I just started listening to Drusev's as well, and his is great. That first episode he did with Anup is awesome. Like, I didn't know what Anup was like. I don't know anything, but now I know. He's chill, he's cool, everyone's having a good time.
Yeah, I think it's so important to kind of humanize yourself, even in this case, to people watching, because it helps you connect with them on a real level. It also does take a bit away of that mysterious effect, which, you know, can help you get maybe more views and stuff when people are like, oh, this dude's like how are they doing this? This is so crazy. This is something unbelievable. And then when you hear them talking and explain that stuff in like a simple manner, you're like, oh, well, the magic's kind of gone now, but I like the guy, right? You know, so it kind of has its pros and cons, but I definitely try my best, you know, even personally, just humanize myself whenever I'm streaming, even in my videos a bit, even though I play characters here and there. Like, I want to humanize myself because that's how people are going to connect with me, and that's just me. I want to have that connection with people watching my shit. So it feels like we're, like, when I'm doing a cover, it's not just, okay, I did this for work, now you come and watch it, and then that's it. I want it to be like, we're experiencing this shit together. You know, like, let's have some fun and just enjoy this shit, you know, these 3 minutes of life, right? So,
Yeah. Well, that's what I was saying to Baina before we started this interview. It was awesome getting to meet you at NAMM, because I always hope that, like, you know, the YouTuber people that we end up meeting, which is usually always at NAMM, are like humanized regular people, and they're not going to give us like a bullshit version of themselves.
Yeah.
And you didn't. You were great. And like, I'm like, yeah, this guy's fucking chill and it's awesome. We can actually have a conversation, which is like great, man.
Dude,
like,
no,
I hope that everyone is like that.
Dude, I do too, man. It's so awesome just having that connection with people. And we're doing the same shit, you know what I mean? So it's cool to talk to people about that stuff. But yeah, just being honest and down to earth. And it's like, just when it comes down to it, we're living, you know, our dream jobs. It doesn't make us any different other than this. We're living the dream, you know, we're living happy in that sense. But we're just like everybody else who loves music. We're, you know, music fans first and everything else after, right?
And it's interesting too about how lots of people right now are, you know, trying to start their YouTube channels or podcasts or whatever because of quarantine, and they have a lot more free time. Is I'm also curious to see if people will kind of realize how much work it is as well, like we were talking about earlier, where, you know, lots of people think like, oh yeah, you just play guitar all day, so it must be fucking nice, like it's easy, right? But
dude, it's
yeah, there's a lot more to it than that, and I think people are gonna start to realize that now more than ever when they're starting to do it themselves or trying to do it themselves, and you know, they're like, oh shit, okay, I see how this is a real job now, right?
It's a shit ton of work. I mean, some days I work 14 hours straight, like, and that's just my day, it goes, and I love it though, so it doesn't feel like, you know, 14 hours of work. Yeah. It's like, no, I just fucking worked 14 hours and I kind of had fun. But hey, you're sitting there, whether it be playing guitar or editing the audio or editing your video or making a fucking thumbnail or doing the tags on your video, making sure they're perfect, or making sure the description's perfect, or making sure your lighting doesn't look like you're in like a cave. You know what I mean? Like, it takes a lot of time to do all of that shit that people do not see. And all they see is 3 minutes. How can they? Right? They didn't realize that, hey, that might have took 10 hours.
Right? Yeah, exactly.
Or whatever. So yeah, no, hopefully they start to see that. Because it's a lot of fucking work, man.
What do you usually do, like, when you wind down after working? Do you try and do something completely different from music and remove? Like, do you play games, like, anything like that?
I'm a gamer at heart, right? I grew up with that stuff. So I'll, you know, first thing I'll do is, I like, my schedule plan day to day is, like, wake up at 10, do what I gotta do. I usually finish by 7. You know, I go 10 to 7, just pretty much nonstop, no break. There's no like lunch fucking break. It's make breakfast and then I go, right?
Yeah.
And then after that, I pick up Netta, my girlfriend, right? And we chill a little bit, make dinner together, watch some Netflix. And then if I still have to work, you know, she's home, you know, at like 11, 12, 10, whatever. And then I'm working till 3 a.m. if I have to, right?
Yeah.
If not, I'll just chill, play some fucking video games with, you know, my online game bros, and that's it. That's my cool down. That's my enjoyment. But I, you know, I'm gifted, like, fuck, I get to do what I love. So it's not like I need it in terms of like, oh, I just spend this whole day at work, like I need to, you know, wind down. Some days it's a little excessive, yeah, it's like, okay, I need a fucking 30 minutes or something.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But I'm lucky because, again, most days it's like, oh, that was fun anyways. It's like it didn't feel like work. So
all right, well, I think that's pretty much all we got for you. So, yeah, I just want to say a huge thank you for joining us. And,
thank you for having me. Yeah.
Hopefully we get to see you again soon, man.
Dude, yes, we got to live it up, man. I miss you guys.
This is all over, baby.
I miss you guys, man. If you guys were just down the street, we'd have so much fun. Oh, my God.
Oh, dude, I know.
Oh, yeah, I know. Oh,
there's
God,
so many YouTubers and musicians that I know where I'm like, ah, like, I only get to see you, like, once a year.
I know.
I wish we could just, like, drive 10 minutes and hang out, but...
Well, hopefully NAMM happens again and we can all hang out.
That would be awesome.
That'd be great. All right, Nick. Well, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much, dude.
And yeah, that's it. So thanks again.
Thank you.
All right. Well, that was our interview with Nick Eternal. Always a pleasure talking to him. Lots of insight about, you know, the YouTube scene as well as his perspective on, you know, being in a live band and potentially touring or not touring was really interesting. Lots of, you know, similar feelings that I have towards YouTube and the industry, and also kind of like a similar upbringing where, you know, going through school and university and kind of realizing that that's not what you want to do and just risking it to become a YouTuber. So yeah, it was just really cool to hear that from someone else, because it's, for me personally, it's not really a relatable thing that I can talk to any, you know, personal friends with, like, you know, in terms of like friends I've known since I was a kid or whatever. It's not really like a relatable problem, so it's always nice to talk to other YouTubers, and yeah, I don't know, it's just cool.
Yeah, he's great, man. He had some really good insight, and he's obviously a super smart dude, and he knows what he's doing. And yeah, it's, I just always like hearing people's like up and coming stories, and like he's blown up quite a bit over the past few years. And
yeah,
you know, he definitely deserves the success because, like I said, he does like work his ass off, as a lot of you guys do in the YouTube scene. Yeah, I hope people enjoyed that and got a little bit of insight on Mr. Nikki Boy.
Yeah. So that's pretty much it here. I think we just had a couple things that we wanted to mention.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention a few other homies that are doing podcasts as well besides us, because like we were talking about before, a lot of people have decided to hop into the podcast game just like we have. Dickie Dine started his own podcast called Dickie Time Podcast. It's pretty dope. I listened to the first episode yesterday. It was fucking awesome. That guy is hilarious. He's yeah, doing he's it with his buddy. Guy. I can't remember who his buddy was.
Justin.
Yeah. It was great. And then I'm right now in the middle of listening to Drusev's as well, Dreams and Discourse. His first episode is with Anup. He is fucking awesome. It's a really chill, casual conversation. That's like pretty much what Drusev is in a nutshell. He's just chill, having a good time, laughing, goofing, gaffing. And yeah, it's good. So check out those guys' podcasts as well. And obviously keep giving us feedback as well, because we're learning as we go.
For sure.
So hopefully... we're doing all right and you're enjoying the shit.
Yeah. I think that's pretty much it. I just wanted to mention really quick. I would love to get Mick Gordon to get on this podcast. I think I mentioned that in the first episode too, but right now there's a big thing going on where it seems like he is very unhappy with what happened with the soundtrack in terms of working with the game company, which is id and Bethesda. So apparently something happened with the mixing process where he basically wasn't allowed to fully mix and realize the songs to how he wanted them to be. So the OST came out like last Friday, I guess, and it's a little messy. There's like 60 songs and they're clearly mixed by different people, and Mick doesn't seem too happy about it. So yeah, if he would like to talk about that, I would absolutely love to hear what went on there if he's allowed to talk about it. So I'm going to try and reach out to him and see what happens. But yeah, there's also this like article going around right now about this issue that Mick is having, and it's referencing his comment on one of my covers, which has inadvertently made my cover get a bunch of views, which is kind of cool. Yeah, it's weird, man, and I hope you can work something out with the company, because obviously, like, the one of the best part of the Doom games has been his soundtrack, so it'd be a real shame if the game developing company kind of fucked that up and doesn't work with him again, but...
Yeah, it's really disappointing to hear about that, man, because, like, he created such a unique sound for that game, and I think he really encapsulated what that game should sound like.
For sure.
And, like, he knocked it out of the park with Doom 2016... And
he did it again with Doom Eternal.
He like, did. It just sucks it that just he himself isn't excited about it. That in itself makes me bummed, because you know that he worked his ass off, right?
Oh, so sure.
When that end product sounds like shit, it's similar to like when we did Phantom of the Hill, right?
Yeah.
So it's just like,
it's hard to listen to something that you feel disappointed in, for sure.
Like, you can already see in his comments that he's like, I'm not doing this again kind of thing, right? So hopefully... somebody else takes him on, and like,
I'm sure he'll have no problem getting work. Like, everyone loves the soundtrack, both of the soundtracks. So
I would love, hopefully we'll reach out to him too. I want to really, you know, see if we can talk to him, and if he's down to talk about it, that'd be really cool. But I don't know, pipe dream, man. We'll see what happens. Yeah.
All right, guys. Well, that's going to be all for episode number 2. Once again, thank you guys so much for listening. We're still new to this, so let us know. Any comments, criticism, feedback is welcome. Again, huge thank you to Nick for being our interview of the day. And next up, I'm not sure who is next up right now, but we got a few people in the works, and I think you guys will be very happy with who we get. So, yeah, that's all. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Goodbye.